This is episode 61 with Eddie Herron.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxon.
What up, what up, what up? It's your boy, Tayo Roxon. So, today's episode is with Eddie Herron, and Eddie has many, many, many points of views, one of which is just talking about how global nomads and third culture kids can really take over the world, and not in a, you know, dictatorship sort of way, but in a way that fosters imagination, creativity, and bridges gaps. So, stay tuned to his interesting dynamic and interesting formula for this. Also, while we're here, if you guys could leave a review if you like the show or subscribe, I would absolutely appreciate it. That being said, enjoy the episode and see you on the flip side. Welcome, everybody. Today I have with me Eddie Herron. He's with me in from Australia, right?
Correct.
Australia. Correct. And Eddie is a unique individual. This guy is a nomad. He's a speaker. He does so many cool things. He works at Deloitte. And throughout this interview, he's just going to really dive into the different ways that us as nomads can really impact the world. Welcome to the show, Eddie.
Thanks for having me, mate.
You are welcome. So I touched on it a little bit. I talked about how you know, you embrace your uniqueness there. Why don't you dive into who Eddie Herron is?
Yeah, okay. A little bit of background. I guess we could get some TCK-ness started right from the beginning.
Embrace it!
Yeah. Yeah, so by blood, I'm European-Japanese, but by passport, I'm American-Australian. So I was born in Japan, grew up in the States in my younger years, and then we moved to Australia when I was about 11. Yeah, and that kind of cultural upbringing, I guess. I used to fly around a lot as a kid. I think that really, you know, your formative years really shape who you are. And I think being on planes so much in my younger years, I had that global identity really infused into my way of being. And because I was the sort of oddball in a kind of rural area, I always felt, I wasn't white. So, yeah, I always felt a little bit different from everyone else.
Hmm. Now, yeah. You were talking about there, you said European by blood, you know, American, you have different passports. How do you identify yourself? Because you have all these nationalities.
Yeah, it's a good question. Good question. So, how do I identify myself?
Yes, how do you identify yourself?
So I'm going to say the TCK is definitely probably up there in the list. I think my Japanese identity has more of a romantic thing because it was you know, part of my early years.
Right.
My American identity, I would say I often like credit my drive to succeed and my overachievement-ness. My American heritage and yeah, my Aussie heritage. What would I think Australians are very relaxed people. So those three things together, I think form a lot of, or reflect some things about who I am.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I mean, I think that's fair too. It seems like you've picked, you know, a few things out of all the countries and nationalities that you identify with, which is very, very TCK of you. So yeah. I can definitely understand that.
They're kind of like different expressions of, of parts of you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, and it with your in your case, you're embracing them. So that's really cool. I guess what I'm curious about is because I remember when I first found out about you, you know, it was through mutual friends, Lonnie and Grace. And then I watched your TED Talk and I was fascinated by how you were talking about the, you know, the way we as global nomads, digital nomads, and any sort of nomad, really, people that identify different cultures can really impact the world. And it was really, really good. And I want you to expand on that and kind of what your vision is. Maybe just map it out and tailor it.
Yeah, so I like, you know, one of the things I love doing is expanding my time perspective and looking at the world through deep time. So essentially what that means is like analyzing things with the universe in mind. So if I take that idea and look at third culture kids, and if I were to put them on a petri dish, right, mm-hmm. and look at from the deep time, I think TCK kids is like this emergent phenomenon of the planet coming together. Like, that this is still very new. I don't think we fully understand this, you know? In the last 100 years, we're still at the very beginning of becoming a global entity. And so TCKs represent the kind of the very edges or the beginnings of the phenomenon of this, like, one planetary species. Okay. So this east meets west or north meets south thing, this wasn't possible, you know? Mm-hmm. This happened, but now this is happening more and more. So I just think it's really fascinating, and we're still at the beginning of the beginning. You know, what are our grandchildren going to be like, or our great-great-great-grandchildren, where everyone, like, all their descendants are TCK, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. It sounds to me like you're talking about how the world is becoming more and more multicultural, and you know, we're sort of shying away and moving away from that one culture, monocultural type of lifestyle where everyone is just this, everyone is just that, and it seems like
justice. Yeah, and I, the thing is, I, you know, everyone's multiculturalism. Yeah. I mean, and I just feel like it's become a buzzword and a cliche, mm-hmm. but really it's amazing. It's fascinating. It's so new, you know, mm-hmm. and we're only really just learning about it and trying to make sense of it. So, okay. I guess that's my inner futurist in me that sort of sees TCKs as a kind of phenomenon that will lead to unexpected things that we can't even imagine yet.
Okay. Yeah, and you know with the buzzwords and things you're saying, are you saying that you want it to be more, want people to actually really understand the essence of what it means to be multicultural and kind of what that can actually, the potential that can actually produce.
Yeah, and how profound it actually is.
Yes.
In the context of like the evolution of the planet. Like, this is only just getting started.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Oh.
No, and you know, I think, you know, with the fact that you know, it's a very relatively new word, and people are just now actually starting to find their voices. I think the kind of good things that could come out of that was actually really, really. I'm excited to see what could happen. I mean, we got people like you and Solonia, who was doing the Change School with Grace, and people are just coming up with new ideas. I think the more people you put together that are, yeah. they come to identify different cultures, the different type of, the more solutions that you can have to many exactly. problems. So
exactly. The more different perspectives, and just the cross-section between TCK-ness and innovation, you know?
Okay. Okay.
The Stephen Johnson, who talks about like ideas that have sex, you know, innovation is when different ideas come together, different right. perspectives collide, have sex. TCK folk naturally like are in different ideas because they move to different worlds, and the culture is an idea, you know,
mm-hmm.
so it's a mega idea, but it's an idea, and so it's just that melting pot. It's exciting to think what will happen. That's, you know, good. What's going to happen when Like, most of the world isn't online yet, right?
Yeah.
What's going to happen when someone from Cambodia collaborates with someone from Congo and the TCK? Like, who knows what's going to happen, you know? So that kind of emergent potential really excites me.
And I think technology has, like you're saying, it's a good point there. I also am curious, though. I know you're very into the tech world. What are you doing to sort of make this happen? I know you're active. You're often talking. You're speaking at different events. I mean, you work at several companies, and you've had the opportunity to meet people in your travels. What is your way of using your difference to make a difference?
It's interesting that you said that question, because I was actually meditating on that before. Using my difference to make a difference. Let me think about that. I think it's more for me using what I've been given to spread more life energy. Yeah.
Can you expand on that? That's very interesting.
So, I guess the purpose and this is a beta statement. I'm still refining it, but I like to say my mission is to use my life in such a way that it creates more life all around me, so that more life can continue.
I like that. That's very, very profound. You said that, and I was just thinking that's actually really, really, really deep. And obviously you live by that. So in terms of that, how do you implement that into your office? How do you implement that into your environment?
Well, in a work context, you mentioned in the introduction, but I am the Explorer in Residence at Deloitte Center for the Edge Australia. And we are a research think tank originally that emerged out of Silicon Valley. And we started up a chapter here in Melbourne about 2 years ago. And in my role, it's almost like I'm a TCK in Deloitte. That is to say, I swim in all these different service lines. So one minute I'm talking with designers, one minute I'm talking with strategy and operations, another minute I'm talking digital, because, you know, in these big companies, right, it gets very siloed. You know, digital's here, like accounting is over here, and the role that I have is a bit of an agitator, disruptor. And because I swim in so many worlds, I sort of take that, what I naturally do, and I do that within Deloitte.
You touched on something that was very important to me there, because I think some of the type of careers and ways that, you know, third culture kids can actually influence the workplace, it's by actually bridging the gaps and understanding the different nuances within the office culture. So those roles that actually put them in position to be able to be the liaison between all those cultures or among all those cultures are perfect for that, because, you know, you can understand maybe why IT is saying this and why sales and marketing are doing that. But I'm just trying to think from the perspective of a TCK actually just graduating, what type of job would that be?
I would like to say not just about job, but an emerging redefinition of what career is. And I think what career is now is, you know, I think we're transitioning from the era of specialists to generalists. That means to be a generalist, TCKs and generalists seem to sort of dance together nicely. You know, the generalist is a polymath that has many interests and does many things. And you know, one thing I talked about in my TED Talk, actually, I haven't watched it, by the way.
You haven't watched your TED Talk?
No, I'm too embarrassed. One day I will watch it, but it was so raw to me, and it's just, I can't watch it. One day I will. But what I'm trying to say is, generalist, TCK, I think, when coming from a TCK background, your mind is naturally adapting. It's taking new inputs. It's thinking divergently. It's these sort of it requires your cognition to continually expand, right? Mm-hmm. And that's creativity. And so I think with that, you have this kind of advantage in that it's easier to become multidisciplinary, I think.
I do agree to a certain extent when you're talking about we can carve our own careers. For example, as a third culture kid, someone could be a digital nomad, right? You could be someone that goes to different countries, and like you're saying, with technology, we're not even at the halfway point of the full potential that we have. So you could go to different countries, connect with all the different sorts of people, and work as long as you have Wi-Fi. You could use social media to raise awareness based on, you know, some of the experiences you had. Maybe you grew up in Cambodia or my country, Nigeria, and then you came to New York City for a while, but then, something kept tugging your heart away. But you pick up some things you learned from America, you take that back home or take that back to some of the countries you've lived in, and you implement that, or, you set up different infrastructures and use that to connect. So I think as TCKs, you can sort of become leaders, which is an idea that I like to promote, because I believe that TCKs can be the next set of global leaders. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I think there's certain skill sets that leaders on a global scale can have, and that's understanding nuances, understanding cultures, how to deal with different sorts of people, and thinking from a fresh perspective and not just coming in there without willing to embrace change. So that's just a perspective, but I think from what I was hearing with what you were saying, I think you're saying something similar to that effect.
I just needed to add something that I forgot to include at the beginning.
Sure.
One of my TCK, I guess, my big TCK formative kind of experience was during university, I lived on campus, and I live, so in Australia, we have colleges, which are more kind of, they're residential sort of communities that we live at. It's very different from the frat system, but, so I was part of a college called International House. And at International House, we had 50% Australians and 50% internationals. And I lived there for 3 years. In my third year, I was like elected as president and stuff. So it was really a big, big part of my life. And, we had people from all across the world. And one of the stories that I often, tell people when reflecting on that experience is I would go out the window and there would be, there's this guy from Dubai, a German guy, a Russian girl, a Mexican guy, me, and we'd all be sitting there having a laugh, So I got a huge dose of TCK, and it really infused my, I think I already had those seeds of wanting or yearning to be a global citizen, but living together with people around the world, that definitely probably ignited my TCK identity.
So you're saying, when you're young, especially in your formative periods, it's often good to connect with other internationals.
I think so. Because you develop empathy really easily. Like once you have that skill trained up as a young kid, I think it sticks with you.
No, you're right. I mean, I also was in international school during that period, but I'm trying to think every time I join the dots and connect the dots back to my childhood, certain things make sense.
You understand why
maybe you're more empathetic. Like, you're empathetic is such a great word for that, because I think that's that's the perfect word. You understand why maybe someone does something, you're like, oh, that's so familiar to me, and even though you're not, from that country, it's just something that resonates with you because different cultures. Okay, that's a time that something good happened to you. What about a time when you had some difficulty because of, your multiple identities growing up? How did you overcome that?
Yeah, good question. So, as a kid, so my dad is American European, but he he's lived in Japan for 30-odd years, and my mom is Japanese, but she hasn't lived in Japan for 30-odd years. So as a kid, I had this cultural confusion because both my parents sort of weren't familiar with their mother country. So
that's interesting.
It was really, really confusing. So I think how I... Yeah, and I was in a rural Australia.
Uh-huh.
You know, and there's white people everywhere. How did I overcome that?
So you were a minority, and your parents both were not really as familiar with their parent countries as a lot of people are.
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
So I couldn't really learn about the States through my dad, or couldn't really learn about Japan through my mom. So I had to like forge my own way to understand that. So in my younger years, I went to Japan a few times, and it was always a kind of fact-finding mission for me to understand the culture, because I got a sense of it from my mom, but she hadn't lived there for so long, you know?
Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to ask two questions out of this. What would you tell your younger self now, knowing what you know now?
What would I tell my younger self now? Mm-hmm. I would probably tell him to, I'm going to say, trust the process. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is trusting that there's a kind of intelligence with you, you know, figuring itself out, and it wants you to grow and evolve. This is what I talk about when life, you know, the force of life moving through you. And so, you know, things might seem hard at certain times of your life, but if you trust there's a goodness to it, I think you will find the lessons in it, and it will just make it easier to just take wisdom from it. And I wish when I was younger, I used to beat myself up a lot, and I was confused a lot and that kind of stuff. But, you know, looking back now, all the things that I went through had an intelligence in it and was teaching me something. I'll just say trust.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, I've been asking this question consistently now, and it's the same response. I also have that. It's trust in the process, because then, you know, back then it seems like everything's hopeless. Nobody understands me. No one understands how I feel. I feel alone. But then, you know, as you grow up, you understand that you know, that's part of the process. That's how you learn the art of adapting. That's how you learn how to, you know, really interact with people, because you've overcome that culture shock. Sometimes there's the reverse culture shock when you come back, so to speak, to your quote-unquote home. But just understanding that, you know, you've overcome this. Now you can actually be someone that can help someone else.
And you learn, I believe, probably more about the nuances and subtleties and the dynamics of life through hardship and failure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And experience is the best teacher. That's what they always say. So
experience is the best teacher.
For sure.
And so damn true. And I think you need to live really... Once you've experienced that truth, then you really get it.
Yeah. No, you're completely right. Well, now the other question I wanted to pull out of that, when you were talking about the Australian experiences, I'm fascinated by Australia. I've never been. So I want you to educate me and the world on what it's like with living in Australia. I know you mentioned, you know, the white people there, but I also know there are all sorts of people there. What is it? Yeah. What's a daily life in Australia?
Okay, so I would say Australia is, it's an amazing country. It really is. I mean, a country of 24 million. Just our way of life is, our quality of life is pretty high here. Like, we're up there in the Scandinavian countries. And also, I would say Melbourne is our San Francisco. I would say Sydney is our New York. Brisbane, where I spend a lot of time, is like our Chicago.
So wait, Sydney is like New York?
Yeah, it's hustle and
What's Canberra like? Or Canberra?
The capital. Yeah. It's a planned city, meaning like all the architecture is, you know, it was all intentionally designed. I've only been there once. Adelaide is a city of churches. I've heard Perth is very beautiful. My dad likes Perth. I've never been there. I actually grew up in a little town called Port Douglas, which is way up north near Cairns. So basically, if you want to come to the Great Barrier Reef, you come through my hometown.
Wow. Yeah.
I grew up in a very, very pristine, tropical, beautiful area.
Right.
Now I'm living in Melbourne, and Melbourne's a really beautiful, dynamic city. It's just, there's so much stuff going on. It's ridiculously multicultural, much more than any other city. The weather sucks a little bit here. Melbourne has a great coffee culture. So if you ever really want to, Americans, the U.S. has such crap coffee.
Whoa.
It's true. No, it's true. You come to Melbourne, my friend, and you will experience. Melbourne people are coffee snobs, by the way. So I've become a coffee snob.
You think so?
Yeah. See, I'm really like angry about coffee.
No. I actually am not a fan of coffee because I can't take it. But I'm just trying to, you know, channel what my American friends would say, and it'll almost be blasphemous. Wait, so you're saying the coffee is great, and that's a reason for sure to come over there, okay?
Oh, well, that's one reason.
That's one of the many reasons.
Yeah.
What about the sports life? You know, I'm a huge tennis fan. Australian Open's one of my favorite tournaments. Leighton Hewitt from Adelaide, by the way, was one of my favorite players. My first favorite tennis player was Patrick Rafter.
So Patrick Rafter, old school.
Yeah, look, I go way back with tennis.
Yeah.
I used to put the things in my face like he did. So, and then I'll go out. But
did you watch that Wimbledon game?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I watched it for sure.
The one with the young he beat what's the Spanish guy's name?
I know the game, and I was like, that's Rafter, but.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I've always been curious because you have Australian rules football.
Yeah, cool.
You've got tennis. I know Ian Thorpe. We used to be the man before Michael Phelps. I mean,
yeah.
As you can tell, I probably have all these fast. I am so fast. And then you've got the Hemsworth brothers. I mean,
You're leaving out
all these good things. You got to.
we're a pretty crazy sports culture. So AFL is really big in Victoria, but not as big in other states.
Okay.
So. Whereas rugby league is bigger in New South Wales and Queensland, as is rugby union. So, you know, in the States, there's, depending on where you go, the cultures are quite distinct, whereas Australia has this one sort of, in cities anyway, like a standard multicultural vibe. But you can really notice Victorian culture through its sport.
Yeah. No, and yeah. I say the three ways that I connect to people, this is why I was so passionate about sports, is, you know, because I was saying all these things about Australia and never been there. But the reason I love sports so much is because it's one way I connect. So I connect to people through sports, geography, and pop culture. So, you know, I'm able to talk about a certain player or a certain sport. Or if it's a geography, I can say, hey, how's that place like? And they're always happy to tell. And then, and with pop culture, you know, I brought up, you know, you got your Thor. You know, Thor resides in Australia, people. So, I brought up, Liam and Chris Hemsworth. But I think it's fascinating, what you were saying, because I would never have known about the different dynamics that you were saying, but it seems like there's such a cultural diversity down under that you know, I'm missing out on here. So
you gotta come down, man. It's not that far away.
It's not that far away. I used to live in Vietnam. That was like, it's 20 hours away, at least.
20 hours. All you gotta do is go on kayak.com, book, and you're here.
Which was that simple. All right. We're wrapping up here. I just want you to do some rapid fire questions. You've traveled everywhere. Country with the best food?
Mongolia. But that's half a joke. The food is so bad, it becomes good.
Okay. So you're sticking with Mongolia then?
I'm gonna stick with Mongolia.
Okay. Music, best music.
Best music. I'm just gonna say Burning Man.
Okay, all right, okay, and then if I asked you about a country that you completely changed your mind about, maybe you went there before thinking, I don't know what to think, but then you came out there and you're like, huh?
China.
Explain.
I didn't know much about China. I thought it was just a country of 1 billion people, and they were all the same. But what I discovered was, you know, once you get outside the Han Chinese sort of areas, it is incredibly multicultural. You know, in like Yunnan province and Sichuan province and, you know, the Uyghurs and Xinjiang. I mean, it's just such a mammoth country with so much history. So, yeah, I want to go back to China sometime.
Awesome, yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, I mean, that's it from my side. I'm going to turn it on to you and say, and tell us where we can find you, some of the exciting things you're doing. And I don't know if you had something to say about time travel. I can't remember if that is that true. Was that?
Yeah. Oh. Yes. Next week, I'm organizing a time travel conference with a bunch of futurists. I've been kind of really organically exploring time, but in particular, like how time affects our perception and how we view the world. If I can just weave in a bit of TCK-ness in that, you know, every culture has a different time relationship, right? Some cultures are more past orientated and you know, a Western culture views time in more linear, where you could maybe say Asian cultures view it more circular. So there's all these dynamics of time I'm discovering, and it's almost this kind of language I'm discovering, or sort of I've been using this kind of way of explaining it. But, you know, in the same way we have emotional intelligence or cross-cultural intelligence, I think we need a kind of time intelligence.
Okay, and where can we find out more about this? Is that a website?
Well, yeah, it's just a small little local conference. It's the first iteration. Okay. But I'll be tweeting a lot about it. So you can find me at Eddie Haran, HARRAN. Gotcha. That's probably the best place to engage with me. I play with a huge global community via Twitter.
All right. Well, thank you, Eddie, for your time, and thank you for educating me on Australia and the coffee that I am potentially missing out on.
You gotta calm down, mate.
I will. Thank you so much.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uidmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.